You take the Cadbury Pots of Joy chilled dessert from the fridge. You anticipate the taste of the real melted Cadbury milk chocolate. The creamy yumminess begging you to peel back the lid. Then you remember... you're still in the supermarket. Cadbury Pots of Joy chilled desserts in Cadbury Dairy Milk, Cadbury Caramel, and Terry's Chocolate Orange varieties. Free the joy!
No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, part of the USA Today NFL Wire. And my co-host, Seth Cox, is on the line. He comes from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also from the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. The only problem is, we were supposed to be talking about happy times, Cardinals being back on track, and that did not happen. So this is a sad podcast. And we'll try to get through the best we can. Hopefully you don't like turn us off. We definitely have a lot to talk about, Seth. And how are you doing on this Tuesday evening that we are recording? You, I mean, those of you listening, it doesn't matter if it's Tuesday because it'll be Wednesday or Thursday whenever you hear this. But how are you post Carolina?
Interesting. Interesting. You know, you don't want to say way to see the season kind of come to an end, but after everybody else lost, you know, they're still very much alive, but interesting to see this team, this iteration of the Cardinals continue to find their seasons on the line, basically, in Carolina all the time.
Yeah, that's... once again, they lay an egg in Carolina. They fall behind 24-0, and they come back a bit, but end up losing the game 30-20 to fall to 3-4-1 as they enter the bye week. Really, kind of a bad loss in so many ways. We're going to talk about that on today's show. We're going to talk about the loss and why it happened. We're going to talk about the call and the officiating, the one that everyone's talking about, even. It's even getting a little bit of play, a little bit, not a whole bunch nationally, but it's something that's worth talking about. The fumble return for touchdown that wasn't a fumble, but wasn't reviewed because there, something happened. There's a bunch of injuries and a change at one of the starters, a wide receiver, and we're going to talk about, is the Cardinal season done? That's kind of how we'll close it up. So today on Rise Up, See Red, stick around, and we'll try to keep this as non-depressing as possible. But if we're going to be talking about the game, it's not going to be too great. So before we get started, I'd like to let you guys know that this episode, this edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast is brought to you by the show The Mikado, the latest performance by Gilbert Fine Arts Association, with performances beginning the eve of Veterans Day. So coming up next week and through Veterans Day weekend, you can see the latest edition of community theater, The Mikado, a Gilbert and Sullivan production, written Death, Love, and Honor. Never have stakes so high, been so funny. Join the fun, Gilbert Fine Arts Association. You can find tickets online at gfaa.org. You'll be able to see one of the funniest, most entertaining shows that Gilbert and Sullivan put together. So if you're interested in that, go ahead on over to gfaa.org. That's Gilbert Fine Arts Association putting on The Mikado. And all right, we'll get going to get started this disgusting show. Ultimately, Cardinals lose 30-20. Is there any one thing, Seth, that we can point to say this was what happened?
I think effort early was kind of what happened. This team, for whatever reason, fell early, and then it took too long to get going offensively into the second quarter. That, you know, they score They come out on defense to start the second half, give up a field goal. And then the offense, you know, just isn't, it isn't potent right now. It's not high powered. It's very methodical offense, and they just can't, you know, they just can't figure out what to do and how to win games right now. And it's just, it's interesting because it wasn't what any of us expected coming into this year. And you know, we didn't know that the offense was going to take this much regression. We didn't know that the defense was going to take so long to get going and then end up just not even getting going, really. So it's just been a, you know, it's just been a really odd season. And I think kind of the Carolina game was a great synopsis of how odd the season's been overall. You have, you know, the Cardinals starting out slow. You have, you know, the Panthers getting out to a big, I think they got to 24-0 at one point, wasn't it? And then the Cardinals kind of finding their way back slowly. And then, you know, but then it's just too little too late. And that's kind of been what this season has been. You know, they haven't been able to put together a string of strong games and strong performances. And then even, you know, this week, they couldn't put together four quarters. They put together about, you know, two quarters and what, 3 minutes of good football. And the rest of the time, it was just, you know, bad Cardinals football.
And for me, it came down to really kind of two things. It was the inability to, I mean, it came down to the trenches, which was, if you look at the last two matchups that they've had against Carolina, the other two in the playoffs, that's really where, it's really where the problems were. And it's really interesting to see just how things have happened. They went from a, you know, ever since Bruce Arians got to Arizona and they changed their staff and they changed the personnel, the sack, I mean, if you remember back to 2012, they gave up basically 80,000 sacks. Every year since then, the 3 years the Arians have been here, they've decreased their sacks allowed. So last year was 26 or 27 on the season. After Sunday's performance of the offensive line, and really only one of them you probably could peg on Carson Palmer for holding the ball too long, but through eight games this season, the Cardinals have allowed 25 sacks, nearly the exact amount that they had through an entire season a year ago. And even, you know, I think it was 26 last year. I think it was 27 in 2014 and something in the 30s in 2013. So they were completely unable to stop the run like they were able to do the last several weeks. In fact, you know, one of the things that I noted in an article that I wrote leading up to the game and in one that I contributed to for Panthers Wire, one of my sister sites over there with the NFL Wire, about the Cardinals defense. Statistically, they've been so good, except in the statistics of the run defense. And those numbers were skewed because of their performance in Buffalo. You take the Buffalo game out, they were, I think, top three in rush defense and tied for first in yards per carry. Now, they were okay in yards per carry. They gave just under 4 yards a carry, but, you know, 25 carries for 95 yards to Jonathan Stewart. They gave him another 43 yards to Cam Newton, 36 runs for 141 yards. The Cardinals have been doing fantastically against the run in recent weeks, and they just were unable to do it. It was like the defense didn't know how to do anything. Like, they looked unable to defend Carolina, and the offense looked unable to do anything. They couldn't run the ball, which, you know, David Johnson, the offense, they went up against the second best rush defense and the third rush defense in the NFL and completely just dominated the line of scrimmage. Then against Carolina, who had done well defensively against the run, they were completely shut down. 10 carries for 24 yards. And so it was a complete meltdown, if you want to call it that, meltdown at the line of scrimmage. They weren't getting any push from the offensive line. They weren't protecting Carson Palmer. And the defensive – the trench defense for the Cardinals was just unable to stop anyone.
Yeah, and I think, you know, not to, you know, start the negativity too early, but I think the fact that they have basically put all their chips into the offensive and defensive lines, you know, in free agency and the draft and everything, and this is the performance we're seeing. I mean, that's, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. Disappointing, I guess. It's definitely shocking. The offensive line, especially, how just awful it was on Sunday. I mean, that was by far the worst performance we've seen in the Arians era. Wouldn't you agree?
You'd have to think so. I mean, it was comically bad. And I mean, it hadn't given up that many sacks in a game since that Kevin Cobb game on Thursday Night Football, when he was just obliterated. He was sacked 9 times. He looked, and I mean, that was with a, and remember, that was with a, what was that, D'Anthony Batiste,
yeah,
offensive,
I mean, that
line
was
a left tackle.
That was a team that, I don't know, that was a team that is basically, yeah, I mean, that was just running on fumes at that point versus this team and this, I don't know, like, it's crazy to me. Like, it's crazy to see this happen, especially against a team that has names. I mean, in the names department, Carolina's front seven has been is one of the best in the NFL. But in reality, they've been terrible this season. I mean, they just haven't been good. I don't think Coney Ealy had a sack coming into this game. So, you know, just, I don't know. I'm with you. I mean, that's an embarrassing, embarrassing performance. And then on the defensive side of the ball, the defensive line, like you said, you know, Calais Campbell's highly paid. They've invested in Corey Peters. They've invested, you know, they moved up. You might say, oh, Rodney Gunter's a fourth-round pick. But they moved up in the fourth round, you know, and made a big deal out of it. They, you know, they brought back Frosty Rucker. They drafted, obviously, Robert Kimbiche in the first round. And they drafted Deion Buchanan in the first round. They drafted Kevin Minter in the second round. They traded for Chandler Jones. They drafted Marcus Golden in the second round. I mean, you're talking, like, basically all their capital has really been
in the trenches,
and they literally got their ass kicked on both sides of the ball to what you would guess is an inferior team until you watch the game, and then you're like, oh, the Cardinals. Oh. Like, if you didn't know the records coming in, and you just said one of these teams is, you know, 3-3-1, the other one's 1-5. You were going to say the Cardinals were 1-5. I mean, there was not going to be a question, right?
Right. So. I mean, geez. And you look at Carolina has been comically bad most of the season.
Yes, horrible.
And they looked like that 15-1 team from a year ago. The way they were playing, it was the same type of football that got them to the Super Bowl, yet had forgotten how to play. Now, obviously, health had to part. They're coming off the bye. The Cardinals are coming off of 5 very physical quarters. They were tired. They were banged up. I hate to think that this is actually a thing, but is the 1 p.m. Eastern East Coast start, is that an issue? Is that really a thing that the Cardinals are dealing with this year, that they're just not ready because the games start too early? They practice in the morning. Like, they practice consistently at, you know, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, Arizona time. They've won games on the East Coast in the last couple of years. What happened this year? Because Buffalo, it was just flat after the first series defensively. It was flat on offense. It was bad on defense. Against Carolina, it was the same thing. It's like, they didn't get up that day. And what's really depressing is to see they still have 3 more of those games left. And against physical teams. They've got Minnesota, Atlanta, and Miami in late time slots. And is there something to that? I don't like start time as a reason for it, because these are the same guys that were doing that in the last couple of years. But why aren't they up for? Why aren't they up, especially for a game that they all knew? This has been for the last 6 months. The last 6 months, they've been looking at this game and saying, "We got to go back and get revenge. We're going to avenge that stupid loss that we had." And not, they were embarrassed, absolutely embarrassed a year ago, and then this was almost equally embarrassing, minus the turnovers. I mean, this the play was bad, and how could they show up with that effort on a game that has meant so much to this team for so long?
That's the question. You know, you look at it and you wonder to yourself what the hell happened. And I think we've seen it before with this team, with this organization. Tyrann Mathieu is, you know, a key for them, and he absolutely, like, losing him basically puts them in a funk for whatever reason, and so defensively they all of a sudden start to struggle and find their rhythm again, but that's not an excuse, and I think this was the first time that we saw it not be like Carson Palmer, the moment looked too big for him. Like, I legitimately don't think that Palmer was the problem in this game.
Oh, he wasn't. He wasn't at all.
The only thing I could think, and this is, you know, this is just speculation. I have no insight or anything like that. The only thing I think, though, or could think, what if his performances in the past have soured, you know, his teammates on him, where they're like, "Ah, well, he can't do this." You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying that's what happened,
it seems unbelievable for the amount of respect he has in that locker room, but you know,
it just didn't look right. Like, that was the whole thing. So I don't know. Like, that was the whole thing. It was like nothing looked right. Nothing looked like a team that belonged on a big stage. This looked like a team that deserved to be flexed out of a one, you know, the 4:25 game of the week, and forced to be able to play on the morning because they're not really worth watching.
You know, the more I think about it, I think Tyrann Mathieu is really, the way Tyrann Mathieu plays is the way the Cardinals go. And it's almost exactly like that. If you look at it, it's right. Almost exactly like that with the same amount of effort they play. They were so lights out last year. And it was like, whatever Mathieu is doing, he's having an all-pro special year, and the Cardinals have a special year. He gets hurt, and yeah, they had their initial, you know, they were able to blow Green Bay out of the water. But that was a very, very banged up Green Bay team. And after that, they just looked like garbage. They come back this year. Mathieu's on the field, but he's not really impactful. And what have we seen from the Cardinals so far this year? It's not particularly impactful play. And so he's not performing. Therefore, he's not fueling that fire. And now he's off the field. And it's like they disappeared again. So maybe there's something to that. They really take on the – it's almost like they take on the character of Tyrann Mathieu. It's just he is the heartbeat of that team, which – but if you look at the 2014, it still doesn't make sense because he was not impactful really at all in 2014. And they still pulled off that, you know, the 6-0 start, the 9-1 start, and four, you know – falling down to the end to 11-5, but yeah. it's hard to pinpoint because so many different things went wrong. And then you look at penalties. Oh my gosh, they such a say thing. Say what you want about the refereeing. There's so many flags around the NFL. Here's the problem. the referees are flagging players because they're seeing mistakes. So players should start making less mistakes. And aside from the egregious fouls, the egregious misses, or the egregious missed calls, what we're seeing is just, it's not sloppy refereeing as much as it's sloppy play. I mean, pre-snap penalties, holding calls. I mean, come on, offensive linemen, you guys are good blockers. We've seen it before.
Yeah, and that's what I don't get is, like, what happened? Like, where is this team at right now? And who is this team? Like, that's the question. Who's this team? This isn't the Arizona Cardinals that I mean, so far, to me at least, like, this isn't an Arizona Cardinals team. This isn't a team that looked like they were, you know, 60 minutes from the Super Bowl in 2015. This looks like the beginning of 2013 again, like a team that doesn't know their way, that doesn't know how to play football together as a unit yet. And I'm going to write about this sometime during the bye. I've got time, but I think a lot of it stems from their continued shuffling of the offensive line and continued reliance, and something you and I have talked about, on players that have a long injury history. And so you set yourself up. You know, it's okay to have a Tyrann Mathieu, but it's harder to have a Tyrann Mathieu and a Tyvon Branch and a Frosty Rucker who's been banged up the last couple of years with ankles and knees and things like that. Like, it's harder to have all those guys be in, you don't want to say important position, but be counted on, and then to continue to lose them. Because the idea behind next man up is great. I mean, it's an awesome mantra to hold. But at some point, there's no men left to go, right? Like, at some point you hit a wall in terms of talent. And there was a reason that those guys were in front of other players. They haven't missed Tyvon Branch so much. You know, we even talked about it, that maybe that injury in a sneaky way was actually good for them, right? Like, because it allowed Tyrann Mathieu to get back to the slot. But, you know, it's just one of those things that I just don't know, because, you know, is it the constant shuffling of the offensive line? They've gone back and forth, gone back and forth. They've invested heavily, but, you know, they started 66% new players on the offensive line this year. And then they don't understand why there's not cohesion, why there's not guys, you know, making plays and this and that, or why there's missed assignments and there's issues early. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. I think this is what happens when you are expecting a good team and you just get a...
an okay team.
Yeah,
or okay. Maybe it's not quite this. They're expecting greatness, and they expect it because they had it last year.
Right.
And they're not great. It's like they don't know how to handle that. They don't know how to crawl out of that, because it just the momentum from 2013 to 2014 to 2015, it came to a head, and we're like, oh, next step's obviously got to be the Super Bowl. And
it wasn't even like we talked about this, and maybe you and I, you know, like it happened. Maybe expectations got to them too, right? Like, maybe expecting to be really good got to them, and that made them, you know, that sometimes expectations are a lot harder to deal with than somebody not believing. So,
take every Arizona sports team ever. We saw it with the Suns, and we've seen it with the Diamondbacks two or different three times. You know, when they overachieve one year, they're like, oh, they're going to take the next step. this season for the Diamondbacks, perfect example. The Suns have done it several times. The Cardinals have done it a gazillion times. But yeah, maybe that's it. You know, it's either that or they just were looking so much too past the regular season that they forgot the focus of the regular season. That you can't look past that. And I know the coaching staff's talking one game at a time. You know that. And it's not like what Arians and his coaching staff is saying to their players. They were saying Super Bowl ring or bust last year. They said, you know, in 2014, they were saying that's what they wanted. That's what their expectation was. So they were saying the same things. It's just either they just weren't as good as they were playing a season ago, or they just overlooked. They expected things to happen more than doing the little things to make things happen. Because that's how they've looked all year. Because that's how they looked all year. Like, they're waiting for something to happen and then to start the ball rolling.
Well, and you look at it like this, too. You know, Bruce Arians has been a hell of a coach in the NFL. Just a hell of a coach. But one of the things that I asked Football Outsiders in our preview with them this year with SB Nation was, you know, Arians is right now statistically the greatest coach in NFL history in close games. Could he – was that his coaching ability, luck, or a combination of the two? And it was a combination of the two. And so you have that combination that occurs, right? And now you look at it and you go, all right, well, they're not as lucky. They're just not. I mean, they're not as lucky this year. And Arians has struggled as a coach this year. He has, he has not been the risk it, you know, no risk it, no biscuit. We haven't seen that. We haven't seen a guy that seems to be super in command of situations either. We know he's a fiery and emotional guy, right? Like, but
and we've seen that we've seen that get the best of him when it comes to reviews and officiating. He loses his mind.
And that was kind of my point. Like, you know, we talked about maybe they go as Tyrann Mathieu. Maybe they go as Bruce Arians. And that's the reality of the situation. That they, you know, they have a coach that has worn his emotions on his sleeve for so damn long. And then they come out and just get, you know, blitzed in game one and win and lose on a heartbreaker. And then on game two, you know, they find a way, they play a team in Tampa Bay that's really hot and cold, that's young. Then they, you know, come out in game three and game four and just get manhandled, and everybody goes, what the hell? And I think even Bruce Arians went, what the hell? Like, he has a lot of bluster and a lot of, you know, belief, but I think he also is kind of shell-shocked. And so it's hard to, you know, for the team when they see their leader in Arians making bad decisions. You know, we talked about the leap last week, and he should know better, right? And all of that stuff, like, it's just, it's tough. And so you wonder if that's gotten, to him a little bit, and then maybe it's affected the team in a slightly negative way, you know, and what the reality is this is all speculation, because nobody expected anything like this. Like, nobody expected the bottom to seemingly fall out. It hasn't. I mean, we'll talk about this shortly, but it hasn't. They're still really in this thing. But they don't look like a contender at all. Like, they don't look like a playoff team, and they don't look like I wouldn't even say they look like a good team. Like, they just look like a team kind of running out the string right now. And that, I think that's the most disappointing aspect so far.
This is a team that's supposed to already have its identity, and it just, they don't know what they are. Are they good defensively? Are they good offensively? Are they dynamic awesome offensively? Do they just control the ball? Do they protect Carson Paul? Do they not protect him? What? Because they're losing in so many ways. Let's kind of move on from that. So next up on Rise Up Saber, we're going to talk about something that's gotten a little bit more play. There was a really, really, really bad call that didn't get overturned. So we'll talk about some of the things around that and, you know, what it meant, how much it affected the game. That's next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and let's turn our attention to really the beginning of the end, if you could call it that. The beginning of the end. Carson Palmer is under fire. He's pressured. He's about to get sacked. He has the presence of mind to do kind of shovel the ball in David Johnson's direction. It's obviously an attempted pass, a poorly attempted pass, but the ball hits the ground. No whistle is blown. Thomas David picks it up, runs with it. The whistle still doesn't blow, and takes it all the way to the end zone. And, okay, oh, crap, turnover. Where it's happening again. And then that's kind of – it's almost what it felt like, oh, this again, which is what happened in Carolina in the playoffs last year. It was, oh, wow. But then they're like, oh, this is no big deal. They review every turnover. But if they come back within, you know, it's not, they don't take any time. They kick the extra point. Bruce Arians loses his mind. It looked like he tried to call a timeout. They didn't even give him the timeout. And everyone at the TV booth, every fan, every coach, every media member, everyone who's watching TV is saying, that's got to be overturned. And then they don't overturn it. How does that happen? And then two, we get this story coming out of the league that says that there was a network feed issue. They didn't have the replay feed. And so the replay official had to go by his naked eye, and he just went with the call on the field rather than, you know, as so that just, okay, that's what it is. So that's all they could go with. They didn't call down. They didn't send it down. Apparently there was no feed in New York either with the league offices where they're watching it at the same time. And so they didn't have the feed. So they shut it up and it wasn't up. And that's when the play happened. That's the explanation that Bruce Arians gave, because that's the explanation that Bruce Arians was given. That story is what has come up from several people and confirmed. Ron Wolfley said he a guy told him that. Kent Summers confirmed that. And so that's the story that's coming out of the league. Monday afternoon, or today's Tuesday, Tuesday afternoon, Mike Pereira, the Fox guy who used to be head of officiating for the NFL, now represents Fox, works for Fox, said the NFL never called Fox to say there was a feed issue. So somebody's covering their butt for something. And to be honest, the league's reasoning or explanation behind that doesn't make any sense, because there were replays. I mean, you look up at the TVs around it, and I don't know what the replay officials box looks like, but in the press box at University of Phoenix Stadium, you've got all the reporters. So we see the play live, and there's two dozen TV monitors that are showing the TV feed, which is a few seconds delayed. So you see the play, and it's like, what happened? And then you look up to the TV and see it again. So this official, I mean, if they're having officials, it seems as ridiculous, and billions of dollars, and they can't get the feed right. They can't overturn. I mean, they have these safeguards in place to protect plays to make sure you're getting the right call. And ultimately they get an egregious call done wrong, and they can't even look at it.
Yeah, and you wonder how that happens, like you said, like what the hell? But
is Fox covering their rear by saying, "Oh, they didn't tell us that"? So how, let me, or is the NFL covering their back? Or to me, it sounds like that's a story. That's at least to me, it's a story they're saying to protect just some screw up by some weather. You know, he stepped away from the monitor to go pee, or and so he wasn't even there, or I don't know.
That's the thing is, I don't know what on earth happened. Like, what happened? Like, how does something like that happen? Like, how do you? And so if the replay thing's out and you call, then, you know, you just deal with it. Like, it's just the reality of the situation. But, like, you can't have a controversy about it either. Like, so if, you know, I get Pereira's standpoint, like, oh, we don't want it to look bad for Fox. But I think if you're Pereira, you just say, well, that sucks that the replays went out and we, you know, had to go with what happened by sight, and the guy just honestly didn't get a good look at it, right? So that would have made it much simpler to take, you know, oh, the replay thing's out. It's unfortunate. It happens every once in a while. And, you know, unfortunately, it happened at a specific point in the game when the Cardinals needed a replay to go their way. I think that's, you know, kind of all you can – you can say to that, but instead they have gone, you know, kind of this other route, and now you're getting contradictory stories, and Pereira is covering up for Fox, or Pereira is telling the truth, and the NFL is covering up for their incompetent replay official. So now, like, you're just going to have a bunch of people that are bitter. But in the end, it just created a 7-0 game. Right. And the Cardinals as a team have to be able to respond from that. But again, went back to a couple of our earlier conversations, maybe the reaction of the coach, maybe the reaction in that sense, you know, took over what was actually occurring on the field and got the guys out of it for a short period of time. Because, you know, after the second quarter, they did play well. They just played like garbage the first half. First, what, 28 minutes, 27 minutes.
Yeah, and it's almost, and I could see this, it's almost like the way the Carolina game went last year, when something bad happened, they're like, oh, here, especially because it was a turnover. It was a Carson Palmer turnover. Like, oh, man, not again. And so they let off the gas a little bit instead of responding with, what the heck? This was a stupid play. How could they F this? They F this call up. We're better than that. We're gonna stop them, and we're going to score, and which is the response they should have had when you have
all these adversity. Yeah, and all these veterans that have been there. But I think the other thing is this. You have a group of guys that have really expected, like you said, expected greatness, and they haven't had it yet. So now, you know, like you said, now they're sitting in a weird, they don't really believe in themselves type situation, and so now you just sit here and continue to wait and wait and wait and deal with, you know, everything, and then that happened. I don't know. It was really weird. Like, it was weird to see them fold up shop after that happened.
But they bounced back.
Right, and then they responded. Then they bounced back, and it's like, wait a second. Like, did Arians have to go in and say, like, hey, you know, dummies, like, yeah, we got robbed. It was a terrible call. But you have to, you know, move on. Like, is that what it took? Because these are grown professionals that have been in, you know, the highest stakes situation in the NFL, and that's what happened? I don't know.
And you look at the refereeing. There were, I mean, the story, the national story isn't about the replay. It's about Cam Newton and his talk of not feeling safe. There were the Calais Campbell one, that was definitely a mistake. He should have been flagged for that one. Although, I mean, the rule whether you get blocked into him, it's a very gray area. The number of flags that were is the 10 penalties the Cardinals had. And dating back to, I mean, you look at the game against the Jets, because that wasn't a clean game either. Jets had 10 penalties. The Cardinals had 9 penalties. They just were dominating the ball. They were dominating the game, and so it didn't really matter. But their lack of discipline is concerning, especially on offense. It's supposed to be so in rhythm. They're getting holding penalties. They're getting pre-snap penalties. Now the flag on Carson Palmer was absolutely absurd. I've seen other players lose their minds on the field and not get flagged. And I've seen Bruce Arians verbally abuse officials and not get flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct. Yet Carson Palmer, you know, I don't know if he cursed. Now, he says he didn't curse, but his body language is like, come on, are you kidding me? And then he gets flagged for 15 yards. I mean, I don't know. I'm not one to, for the most part, say that the league has a penalty problem because of the referees or because of the rules. More so, it's just the fact that the players are just not, they're just committing too many infractions. That's my personal opinion, but it is getting in the way, and I know it is affecting a lot of people when watching the game.
Well, and that was my whole point of the story is the penalties might be correct, but it's just – it completely bogs down the game. Like, the game has become nearly unwatchable because there's no rhythm, there's no flow. Like, the game itself, when it's occurring, is still great, but it just takes so dang long for it to be occurring because there's always – it's just – I don't know. It's just frustrating to watch. And then you have, and that's the thing is, like, I don't think it changes the outcome of games or anything like that. Like, I'm not saying that it's fixed or rigged. It's just, it changes the enjoyment of the game. It changes the ability to sit and watch a game. And, you know, and so you sit there and you end up watching just this rigmarole of flags and penalties and you just wait for a rhythm to happen, and then you get into a rhythm, and then, you know, more penalties come out. So it's just, you know, it's frustrating to watch, and the continuation of it is even more frustrating because you just want to sit down and watch football games, and, you know, every big play, you're going, is there a flag? They joked about it on the Sunday night football game. They said, I think every kickoff or punt has had a flag on this, you know, occur. And it's like, yeah, hey, I think it has too. Like, this isn't just a Cardinals, you know, thing. I mean, the Oakland Raiders were penalized 23 times.
That's crazy.
Like, that's just... That just makes – that's what I'm saying. That's
just garbage.
It makes the game not fun to watch. That's all it is. Like, it's not – like, it's not you and I saying, like, oh, this is, you know, this is against the Cardinals and they're trying to, you know, screw the Cardinals. No, it has nothing to do with that. Like, it just makes it not fun. Like, you're like, all right, this is
– Oh, look, there's a big play. Oh, wait, it didn't really happen.
Yeah, exactly. So it just – there's no – it has taken away some of the flow and the beautiful – you know, the beauty of the NFL game.
Talk about some of the injuries that the Cardinals came to that Panthers game with a lot of injuries, bye weeks at a good time. But there's one player who has stepped up, and we'll talk about that because I know you had something to say about it, and you wrote a little bit about it, is the change of wide receiver. It is official. J.J. Nelson is now the starter alongside Larry Fitzgerald. He had himself a fantastic game. He played well against Seattle, and he, again, I mean, he had, what was it, 8 catches for 70-something yards. He had 2 touchdowns. He really did very well. And looked like more than just a guy who says, hey, go run, I'll throw it to you over the top. He was, his yards per catch was just under 10, not something you'd expect from him. And so J.J. Nelson, now officially the number 2 receiver, he has kind of deserved it in some ways because you've seen this development. So it's kind of a testament to his development. One, I think it's a message that they're sending to John Brown and Michael Floyd. Hey, you got to do better. Too inconsistent. John Brown hasn't been consistent. Obviously, his health and his condition are a factor. You mentioned it on Twitter. What are your thoughts on this decision?
I think it makes sense. I think it's one of those things where you look at it and it's, you know, obvious that Nelson right now is their second best receiver, and Nelson right now has created an ability to, you know, be used in multiple ways. He's taking John Brown's spot right now, and I don't think they really have a Michael Floyd on the team anymore. Like, I don't know what's going on with that guy. But I think Nelson has earned this opportunity, and it's unfortunate that Brown is dealing with health issues, because I think he's really been, you know, I think his early season struggles are now coming to light as why he was struggling. And so now you're hoping that he's able to get healthy, not just for his NFL future, but just his future in general. And then, really kind of get paid and everything like that, so he can take care of his family and things of that nature. But you look at the role of J.J. Nelson, and it's the Bruce Arians special. Let's be honest. It's the ability to win deep, and then you're such a threat deep that now all of a sudden all this stuff underneath starts to come open, right? Like, all this stuff in the intermediate and underneath comes open. And you know who has never been able to do that consistently? Michael Floyd. So Floyd, you know, Floyd wasn't able to do that. Brown looked like he was going to be. And, then it ends up that it's Nelson that has taken the next step. And I don't think John Brown's necessarily donezo. I do think Michael Floyd is playing out the string here in Arizona.
And, well, this isn't to say, you know, Arians definitely came out and said that he's a starter, that Floyd or Brown are going to take it from him. But we've heard this same line as well with, who's this other guy? Brandon Williams. Brandon Williams got the same line, the same treatment preseason at the early of the season. And guess what happened? He disappeared. He's off the face of the field, inactive several games. And so as long as it's going well, then with it. And Aaron's even mentioned on Monday that where this they were went for JJ because he had such a spring. Then he goes and breaks his thumb. He drops a couple passes, and then the momentum from the great spring kind of slowed up. And Aaron described this is where September, which the two of us talked like, okay, JJ Nelson going to have a breakout year, and the two of us still did. That's just like, how can that happen when he's the fifth receiver or even the fourth receiver? You know, he's going to have a handful of catches here. Maybe he'll have an impact game here or there. But, you know, maybe this is really going to happen. It's not going to be because it's partial stepping up. And two, the guys in front of him just aren't doing well. They're not playing nearly as consistently enough.
No, they're not. They're not, very good right now. And so whether it is injuries or just ineffectiveness, I mean, that's just the reality. They're not a very good group right now. And, you know, it's again goes back to something you and I've talked about. When you came into this year, you weren't thinking, oh man, we're really hope that they don't have wide receiver issues. Like, you thought, this is no big deal, whatever. But all of a sudden, you know, you look at it, the offensive line is a mess. The wide receiver core is a mess. And I don't know exactly what to think of the defensive front seven. And those are all things that when you started the season, you went, okay, this is what we are this is what we want. This is what we're hoping for. These are talented, you know, this is a talented group. And yeah, now they're all question marks, and the wide receivers are question marks because, you know, you said, oh, what are we going to have post Fitz? Oh, well, you could, you know, if Fitz retires this year, you bring back Floyd and you have John Brown, who's taking the next step, and then J.J. Nelson, who's ready to rise. And now you go, okay, well, John Brown could have, you know, a serious, you know, affliction for the rest of his life. I like I said, I think Michael Floyd's playing out the string at this point. I don't know how you feel. And then you have J.J. Nelson, who looks really good. But all of a sudden now it's like, oh, crap, wide receiver is a position of need because Jerron Brown's hurt. And, you know, and so it's just – it's weird how this entire, you know, this entire thing has really
– basically occurred. Everything – that we thought we knew was wrong.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, the offense was supposed to be dynamic. It wasn't. The passing game was supposed to be. It hasn't been. David Johnson is more than we thought. He's been even better than we thought he would be this season. The offensive line took a step back. The defensive line, the pass rush was better. The defense got better, and then was bad, and then was good, and then was bad. So it's very frustrating. So that's going to bring us to our last topic. Coming up next on Rise of Sierra for the final segment is the future of this team looking forward for the rest of the season. What is left? Are they done? Are they not? Do they still have a chance? We're going to talk about the next for our final segment of Rise Up Sea Red. We're back for the final segment of Rise Up Sea Red, and the question is this. Are the Cardinals done? Is the season done? I think the two of us have slightly different opinions on this. Now, one, statistically, based on right now, based on the record, 538.com says that the Cardinals have a 30% chance of the playoffs. If you look at the metrics, the graph, the percentages that Seth shared a couple shows ago, 3-4, bad news. When you've got 3 wins and 4 losses, that puts you at a 19% clip of possibility of making the playoffs. And I wrote it on Tuesday. I said Cardinals season just ended in Carolina again. While the Cardinals, I believe, are talented enough to be able to do what they need to do, they basically need to go 7-1. They basically need to go 7-1 in their last 8 games, and I don't see it happening. What talent could they do it? Yes. But there's not been a single thing about this team that shows me that they are going to. They have 3 more early East Coast games. They've looked embarrassingly bad in those 2 so far. They've got to travel to Minnesota. They've got to travel to Atlanta. They've got to travel to Seattle still. They have New Orleans, a team that just knocked off Seattle. And, you know, can they get 7 wins out of the last 8? They can. Every one of their schedules beatable, but the Cardinals just haven't looked good. What's your take on this? But I say, as much as I want the Cardinals, I say their season's done. We're just seeing what happens.
I would agree with you until Minnesota last night. And so after Minnesota lost, and I know it's in Minnesota, but they don't look very good. Like, I don't know if the Cardinals' defense is as good as the Vikings, but offensively, they're nowhere. I don't, even with the Cardinals' offense struggling, I don't think the Vikings' offense is nearly as good as the Cardinals. So, you know, it's just, it's close. I mean, it's close, but the fact that I don't think Minnesota is very good, I don't think Green Bay is very good. I'm still not absolutely sold on Atlanta. New Orleans is a complete mystery.
Washington and Philadelphia, likewise. What Washington?
I think Philadelphia is good. I think Dallas is just that good. I think Philadelphia is good enough. I just don't know, you know, how good that is, but I think they're playoff good, especially in this, you know, this addition or this, you know, addition of the NFC where, I mean, really outside of Dallas, what team would you say that, like, just from watching, outside of Dallas, what team would you say is better than Arizona? Just like right now? I don't know. Like, statistically and record-wise and head-to-head, like, there's a ton of different answers, right? But but what team outside of Dallas would you look at and go, that team would just blow out Arizona? Or even, like, you know, coming into Arizona, like, you wouldn't feel comfortable with it. Seattle's offense is a train wreck.
They still don't have Cam Chancellor back, and Michael Bennett's going to be out 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, and so New Orleans,
that's a really big blow. That's a really big blow to their defense because he's kind of like the anchor to everything that they're able to do up front.
Yeah, and New Orleans' defense is not good. The Giants are more of a head scratcher than even the Cardinals. All that being said, I don't know if they are good enough to make it to a wild card game because what? I mean, who are they gonna? I mean, there's just too many teams they have to pass. Don't you
think? But at the same, that you think so. That's what it looks like. But at the same time, I mean, they picked the absolute. If they win this game, we're talking about something completely different. Now, they weren't close to winning. They win this game, Seattle loses, Minnesota loses. Real close to being in the driver's seat again. Because then you've got, you know, they beat Carolina. Then you've got the bye. They're 4-3-1. Then you've got San Francisco. Okay, cupcake win, you know, quote-unquote cupcake win at home. Then you've got Minnesota, the banged up. I mean, but they didn't. And that's the thing. So they put themselves in the position. There's just so many teams. There's just a big mess. And they're real close. There's like up to half the leagues within like a game of each other. Seattle's like a game and a half up on them. Cardinals can do it. There's too many teams out there, and I can't see the Cardinals doing it because anything to say that they're going to be out on a rope, especially now. Oh, we didn't even talk about the injuries. We forgot to mention those injuries. They're down Jared Valdir. They're down Tyrann Mathieu for 3 to 6 weeks. Gerald Valdir is done for the year. Wetzel at left tackle. I'm not sure how that defensive back rotation is going to look like right now, especially if Theron Simons is. So they've got DJ Swearinger and Tony Jefferson in the back all the time. You're going to have Marcus Cooper and Patrick Peterson. Then in the slot, Cooper's going to slide over the slot, but is it going to be Justin Bethel? Is it going to be Theron Simon? Yeah. And then the offensive line is a mess. You've now lost to Fonny Moma. And, you know, they're a banged up team with some key players done against a very, very, very tough second half schedule. You know, they've got 5 of 8 on the road and 5 of their last 7 on the road, including 3 teams that, as of right now, appear to be at least they had to be in the driver's seat for the playoffs.
Right. And that's the reality of it. And so I think the only way they make the playoffs this year is if they sneak by in the NFC West. And I still think that's a chance because as good as I thought Seattle was, now I realize they're not good. And it's just because they have no talent on offense. Like, they have Russell Wilson, who's the best quarterback in the NFC West, probably. They have okay wide receivers. But, I mean, overall, they're just not very talented. So, you know.
They really could. I mean, they're going to be at home on Monday night. They're going to be playing the Bills. The Bills aren't to the
if the Bills had LeSean McCoy, I'd be more comfortable in that game. I just don't know if they're gonna have LeSean McCoy. You know what I'm saying?
True, like, that's true.
And so that makes a huge difference.
If LeSean McCoy plays, they could. I mean, it's not unreal to see them lose to the Bills. Then they're going on the road to the Patriots.
And so then the Cardinals gain a game by having not to lose finally. So, because they can't lose this week. So,
you know, come on.
Yeah. So they have a, I shouldn't say they gain a game, they get a half game. You know, and so now they're 3-4-1. The Seahawks are 4-3-1. So basically, it's a game, and they still have their head up. So it's one of those things. I don't know. Like, I don't see a way that they're out of it. But I think their way to make the playoffs is dicey at best. And so, and you know, Valdir getting injured, that's tough. Matthew getting injured again, that's, you know, again, it's another injury. It's a different injury. It's a common thing with him, and just the way he plays at his size is just, it's tough. You know, he is Bob Sanders. I've said that for a long time. He's one of the great defensive players in the NFL when he's playing. And he is just not able to play as much. So, so you look at it, and that's what you, you know, that's the way you look at it. And we still, I think maybe the thing that keeps me from like completely dismissing this team is the fact that everything's still the same. Like, I know Valdir's gone, and I know the offensive line is now one starter from last year, you know, one and a half, if you want to call Watford a partial starter from last year, but like, it's still the same offense. Like, it still has its key pieces together, and you can't tell me that there's not some talent still in there that are going to be able to make a run at this thing. And so maybe it's just my stubborn belief in what is not there this year. But yeah, I wouldn't say they're done yet, but when they come out of the bye, you know, they have to find a way to go 2-1, you know, between San Francisco, Minnesota and Atlanta, and then, you know, we kind of reevaluate the situation from there. If they go 1-2, like you said, they're done. If they
lose to San Francisco, we're
if they lose to San Francisco, like, it's over. It's not even worth discussing anymore, right? So
throw Zach Dysart out there. Come on, just
not that much. Not that much. But yeah, I mean, I think this show and what we've heard from the Cardinals, and even like, did you see the whole Mark Dalton thing on Twitter with Doug Franz's article?
No, I did not.
He took a shot at Franz's headline, and you know, knowing how it works, I'm sure Franz didn't write the headline, but he had terrible grammar in the headline, and Dalton took a shot at it, and I wrote about it today on Revisiting the Birds, and I said, this is when you can see things kind of starting to unravel, right? Like, when this type of stuff bothers you, right? Like, this type of like a headline bothers you because that a local sports writer wrote. So that's, you know, that's tough, but
okay, excuses don't. I see it right now. So the headline is excuses doesn't win championships. Good old Mark Dalton, neither does subject verb agreement. And he likes to take his shots at media members. He really kind of enjoys that.
So, but it's just interesting. And so you kind of want to watch it and see, like, is this, you know, is that where this team is already? Like, that's a really, that's a really far drop. But as Bruce Arians so famously put it, in all or nothing, it's a short drop from the penthouse to the you-know-what house. And I think the Cardinals are figuring that out right now, aren't they?
I think so. I've declared this season done. I'm still rooting for them. I still think it's possible. I just don't think it's going to happen. And so I think that this year, at best, we're going to look at a disappointing end. If even if they catch fire, it's not going to be quite enough, and it's going to end like 2013. And they're going to have put themselves in too big a hole early to come back. But hopefully they start playing well and then prove me wrong. But we're all a Cardinals fan still. So so let's leave it at that. That'll wrap up this edition of Rise Up Sea Red. You can find us we try to be everywhere. So we're featured on Seth's site. We're on Blog Talk Radio. We're also featured on sports360az.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Radio. You can find us on Facebook and on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red. On behalf of the two of us, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back in a week from now. We'll be talking, I think we'll talk about our mid-season awards and blah, blah, blah. We don't have a game to talk about, so the Cardinals won't have lost, so that there's that possible. So
all right,
that'll wrap this show up. Go Cardinals, beat the bye.
Have a good night, everybody.